And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, I want to give a shout out again to Rich Forrest, who's still lollygagging in the bed in the hospital in Florida. Not Florida, California. Today's August the 5th. 217th day of the year. 148 days until the year is over with. On this day in AD 25, Guangwu claims the throne as Emperor of China. He restored the Han Dynasty after the collapse of the short-lived Xin Dynasty. 135, Roman armies enter Betar, slaughtering thousands, ending the Bar Koba revolt. Romans didn't mess around. 642, Battle of Masterfield. Penda of Mercia defeats and kills Oswald of Northumbria. In the year 910, the last major Danish army to raid England for nearly a century is defeated at the Battle of Tattenhall by the Allied forces of Mercia and Wessex. King Edward the Elder and Althered, the Lord of the Mercians, led the English forces. 939, the Battle of Alhandric is fought between Ramiro II of Leon and Abd el Rahman III of Zamora in the context of the Spanish Reconquista. The battle resulted in a victory for the Emirate of Cordoba. 1068, Byzantine-Norman Wars. Italo-Normans began a nearly three-year siege of Bari. Okay. In 1100, Henry I is crowned King of England in Westminster Abbey. 1278, the Spanish Reconquista. The forces of the Kingdom of Castile initiate the ultimately feudal siege of Algeciras against the Emirate of Granada. 1388, the Battle of Otterburn, a border skirmish between the Scottish and English in northern England. It's fought near Otterburn. 1506, the Grand Duchy of Lithuania defeats the Crimean Khanate in the Battle of Kletsk. 1583, Sir Humphrey Gilbert establishes the first English colony in North America. He did it at what's now St. John's in Newfoundland and Labrador. And that's the first known English colony. 1600, the Gowrie Conspiracy against King James VI of Scotland takes place. For those who are not familiar with that, it's a series of events unfolding on August 5th, 1600. It's still shrouded in mystery. Although the facts of the actual attack and deaths of the Ruthvens are known, the circumstances are a mystery. Now, Ruthven had a reason to seek vengeance against King James VI, as he'd executed his father in response to the Ruthven raid, in which was inspired by the high debts of the king to the Ruthven family. In the king's mind, getting rid of the family got rid of the debts, especially that the family was stripped of all ownership of its assets because of treason. And Ruthven is John Ruthven, the second son of William Ruthven, the first Earl of Gowrie, and his wife Dorothea Stuart. His brother James, the second Earl, died in 1586. So John succeeded him as the Earl of Gowrie while he was still a child. Now, the Ruthven family did have a history of treason. Like his father and grandfather before him, Ruthven attached himself to the party of the reforming preachers who procured his election in 1592 as provost of Perth, and that post was almost hereditary in the Ruthven family. He was educated at the Grammar School of Perth, University of Edinburgh. That was about the time when his mother and his sister, the Countess of Atholl, aided the Earl of Bothwell in forcing himself, sword in hand, into the bedchamber of the king at the Holyrood Palace. A few months later, Ruthven joined with Earls of Atholl and Montrose in offering to serve Queen Elizabeth I of England, then almost openly hostile to the Scottish king, and it's probably also had relations with the rebellious Bothwell. Went to Italy in 1597 with his tutor, William Ryan, and they enrolled at the University of Padua in April. And then on his way home, he stayed so much in Geneva with the reformer Theodore Beza. So basically what it boiled down to is that Ruthven had a serious grudge against James VI, who became eventually James I of England. So on August 5th, James VI of Scotland got up early to hunt around the neighborhood of Falkland Palace, which is where he was residing. He was usually accompanied by Ludovic Stuart, the Duke of Lennox, and John Erskine, the Earl of Mar. Thomas Erskine and some others also accompanied. And he was approached by 20-year-old Alexander Ruthven, younger brother of John Ruthven. And he told the king he and his brother detained a foreigner carrying a large quantity of money at Gowrie House in Perth and wanted James to come interrogate the man. King eventually agreed to go, and Alexander Ruthven sent a servant on ahead to tell his brother the king would be arriving later in the day. And he wanted the king to keep everything secret. Well, it was an assassination attempt, and this whole thing became known as the Gowrie Conspiracy. In 1620, the Mayflower departs from Southampton, England, carrying would-be settlers on its first attempt to reach North America. It's forced to dock in Dartmouth when its companion ship, the Speedwell, springs a leak. 1689, in the Beaver Wars, 1500 Iroquois attack Lachine in New France. That's Canada for those with a classic education. 1716, Austro-Turkish War. One-fifth of a Turkish army and the Grand Vizier are killed in the Battle of Petrovaradin. 1735, Freedom of the Press. New York Weekly Journal writer John Peter Zinger is acquitted of seditious libel against the royal governor of New York. The reason for his acquittal? What he said was true. And that is the ultimate defense to a charge. 1763, Pontiac's War. The Battle of Bushy Run. British forces led by Henry Bouquet defeat Chief Pontiac's Indians at Bushy Run. 1781, the Battle of Dogger Bank takes place. 1796, the Battle of Castellon and Napoleon's first Italian campaigns of the French Revolutionary War took place on this date. 1816, the British Admiralty dismisses Francis Ronald's new invention of the first working electric telegraph as wildly and wholly unnecessary. They wanted to keep using semaphore. 1824, Greek War of Independence, Konstantinos Kanaris leads a Greek fleet to victory against the Ottoman and Egyptian naval forces in the Battle of Samos. 1858, Cyrus Westfield and others complete the first transatlantic telegraph cable after several unsuccessful attempts. It'll operate for less than a month before it will stop, but at least they gave it a good college try. 1860, Charles XV of Sweden, of Norway, Sweden, is crowned King of Norway at Trondheim. 1861, American Civil War. In order to help pay for the war effort, on this date, the U.S. government levied the first income tax as part of the Revenue Act of 1861. If you made more than $800, you had to pay 3% to the government. Even though it was supposed to be a temporary tax for the time of the war, it wasn't rescinded until 1872. And in fact, the current income tax was a temporary tax put in to fund World War I. Well, World War I is long since over, but we're still paying taxes. 1861, the U.S. Army abolishes flogging. A big mistake, having been an officer. 1862, American Civil War. Battle of Baton Rouge along the Mississippi River near Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Confederate troops attempt to take the city. driven back by fire from Union gunboats. 1864, American Civil War, the Battle of Mobile Bay begins at Mobile Bay near Mobile, Alabama. Admiral David Farragut leads a Union flotilla through Confederate defenses and seals one of the last great southern ports. 1874, Japan launches its postal saving system, modeled after a similar system in the UK. 1884, the cornerstone for the Statue of Liberty is laid on Bedloe's Island, now known as Liberty Island, in New York Harbor. 1888, Bertha Benz drives from Manhattan to Florsheim and back in the first long-distance automobile trip, commemorated as the Bertha Benz Memorial Route since 2008. In our woke society, anything a female does is just marvelous. 1901, Peter O'Connor sets the first IAAF-recognized long jump world record of 24 feet, 11.75 inches. That record stood for 20 years. 1906, Persian Constitutional Revolution. Zafar ad-Din Shah Qajar, King of Iran. Okay. I had to take an interruption there for a telephone town hall. In 1906, the Persian Constitutional Revolution. Muzaffar al-Din Shah Qajar, King of Iran, agrees to convert the government to a constitutional monarchy instead of "I'm in charge." 1914, World War I. German mine layer SS Königin Luise lays a minefield about 40 miles off the Thames estuary. She's intercepted and sunk by the British light cruiser HMS Amphion. 1914, World War I, the guns of Port Nipon fort at Port Phillip heads in Victoria, Australia, fire across the bows of the Norddeutscher Lloyd steamer SS Flouts, which is attempting to leave the port of Melbourne in ignorance of the declaration of war, and she is detained. That was said to be the first Allied shot of the war. 1914, Cleveland, Ohio, the first electric traffic light is installed. Shortly thereafter, the first ticket was issued. 1916, World War I, Battle of Romani. Allied forces under the command of Archibald Murray defeat an attacking Ottoman army under the command of Frederick Freiherr Kress von Kreisenstein, securing the Suez Canal and beginning the Ottoman retreat from the Sinai Peninsula. 1925, Plaid Cymru is formed with the aim of disseminating knowledge of the Welsh language that is at the time in danger of dying out. 1926, Harry Houdini performs his greatest feat. Spends 91 minutes underwater in a SEAL tank before escaping. 1940, World War II. Soviet Union formally annexes Latvia. 1944, World War II. At least 1,104 Japanese POWs in Australia attempt to escape from a camp in Cowra, New South Wales. 545 temporarily succeed but are later killed, commit suicide, or are recaptured. 1944, World War II. Polish insurgents liberate a German labor camp in Warsaw, frees 348 Jewish prisoners. 1944, World War II. The Nazis begin a week-long massacre between 40,000 and 50,000 civilian prisoners of war in Wola, in Poland. 1949, in Ecuador, an earthquake destroys 50 towns and kills more than 6,000. 1957, American Bandstand, a show dedicated to the teenage baby boomers by playing the songs and showing popular dances at the time, debuts on ABC TV. That's where Dick Clark got his claim to fame. 1960, Burkina Faso, then known as Upper Volta, becomes independent of France. 1962, apartheid, Nelson Mandela is jailed. Wouldn't be released until 1990. 1962, American actress Marilyn Monroe is found dead at her home from a drug overdose. Evidence has come to light that it may well have been murder, because she knew too much about too many things that she got from pillow talk with John F. Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy. She was not the dumb airhead everybody thought she was. 1963, Cold War, the U.S., the U.K., and the Soviet Union signed the Partial Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. 1964, Vietnam War, Operation Pierce Arrow, American aircraft, the USS Ticonderoga and the USS Constellation bombed North Vietnam in retaliation for strikes against U.S. destroyers in the Gulf of Tonkin. Strikes that didn't really happen. 1965, the Indo-Pakistani War of 1965 begins as Pakistani soldiers swirl across the line of control dressed as locals. The backpacks and the rifles gave them away, but they were dressed as locals. 1969, the Lonesome Cowboys police raid occurs in Atlanta, Georgia, leading to the creation of the Georgia Gay Liberation Front. 1971, the first Pacific Islands Forum, then known as the South Pacific Forum, is held in Wellington, New Zealand, with the aim of re-enhancing cooperation between the independent countries of the Pacific Ocean. 1973, Mars 6 is launched from the USSR. 1974, Vietnam War, the U.S. Congress puts a $1 billion limit on military aid to South Vietnam. 1974, Watergate scandal. President Nixon, under orders of the Supreme Court, releases the smoking gun tape, recorded June 23, 1972, quickly revealing his actions in covering up and interfering investigations into the break-in. His political support vanishes completely. He didn't have all that much to begin with. He was not a well-liked person. 1979, in Afghanistan, Maoist undertake the Balochistan uprising against the Leninist government. 1981, President Ronald Reagan fires 11,359 striking air traffic controllers who ignored his order for him to return to work. 1984, a Biman Bangladesh Airlines Fokker F-27 Friendship crashes on approach to Zia International Airport in Dhaka, Bangladesh, killed all 49 people on board. 1995, Yugoslav wars, the city of Knin, Croatia, a significant Serb stronghold, is captured by our Croatian forces. This happened during Operation Storm. The date is celebrated in Croatia as Victory Day. 2003, a car bomb explodes in Indonesian capital Jakarta, outside the Marriott Hotel. Kills 12, injures 150. 2010, the Copiapo mining accident occurs, trapping 33 Chilean miners about 2,300 feet below the ground for 69 days. 2010, 10 members of International Assistance Mission Nuristan I Camp Team are killed by persons unknown in Karanwa Munjan District of Badakhshan Province in Afghanistan. 2012, the Wisconsin Sikh Temple shooting takes place in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. Kills 6. Perpetrator committed suicide after being wounded by police. 2015, the Environmental Protection Agency at Gold King Mine wastewater spill releases 3 million gallons of heavy metal toxin tailings and wastewater into the Animas River in Colorado. 2019, revocation of the special status of Jammu and Kashmir state occurred, and the state was bifurcated into two Union territories via Jammu and Kashmir and Ladakh. 2020, Prime Minister Narendra Modi attends the Bhumipujan, a land worship ceremony in Ayodhya, lays the foundation stone of Rama Mandir in Ayodhya after the Supreme Court ruled verdict in favor of building the temple on the disputed land. Pakistan retaliates by calling it a Black Bay. Okay, a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. And let's see, holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, Abel of Reims, Adai, Afra, Albrecht Dürer, Matthias Grunewald, and Lucas Cranach the Elder in the U.S. Episcopal Church, Cassian of Uton, dedication of the Basilica of St. Mary Major in the Catholic Church, Emigdius, Minius, Oswald of Northumbria, Independence Day in Burkina Faso, and Victory in Homeland Thanksgiving Day and the Day of Croatian Defenders in Croatia. Well, you know, it's interesting to see all the activity that's going on. Spirit Airlines, for example, they had to smuggle their workers out yesterday in civilian clothes, and they were told to leave the airports because so many flights had been over, I think over 200 and some odd flights were canceled. Some of it was computer issues, some of it they never explained. Spirit Airlines appears to be on the verge of complete and total collapse. They've had to duct tape passengers to their seats who have become unruly. It's just ridiculous. People are going absolutely crazy. All right. Let's see. All right. We're going to continue without all these interruptions, I hope. You know, the eviction ban is back into effect. One landlord claimed he was out $24,000 in rent, and his tenants are out buying boats. And, Corey, one of the individuals, first name was Corey, I just had it, Corey Bush, has spent $72,000 on personal security because she's working for the people and she defends pushing defund the police. She said, "Would you rather me die?" Then there was a photograph of a... And if you wonder why I'm doing a little bit of news, because I was criticized for not doing it. It's also interesting that you can now not fly if you don't have proof of vaccination. Now, they had said that would never happen, but they said a lot. So keep that in mind. And if you're going to be disruptive, you have to bring your own duct tape now. All righty. We've been talking about issues with the moon in the last couple of shows. One of the books I wrote is called Is Someone on the Moon? And it certainly goes into a lot of detail that a lot of people claim to never heard of before. You know, the space program was actually an offshoot of the Nazi space program. And the creator of the Nazi space program was the wonderful Wernher von Braun, who, of course, joined us as soon as he was, to put use his phrase, rescued from the Nazis. Now, there's been a lot of research done. He's actually not the wunderkind he's made out to be. In fact, there's a darker side. Now, the notion, and one that was pushed by Operation Paperclip, which was our program to get Nazi scientists, was that we actually rescued von Braun from the Nazi clutches. Well, turns out there's evidence, a lot of evidence, as a matter of fact, that demonstrates that he, in fact, willingly used slave labor from the Dora concentration camp, which was right next to his rocket factory, and he reported directly to Heinrich Himmler. Far from the aloof wunderkind scientist who was just concerned about research, he turned out to be an SS man, through and through. But his Nazi past was glossed over and even concealed by the Truman administration and administrations after that. So, in fact, he was here in El Paso for quite some time. But then he took over NASA. And the fact that he was the impetus behind the... There was even a Nazi space program that's been downplayed by so many. And that gave rise to the stories that maybe there are Nazi bases on the moon. Now, NASA has made no secret of the fact that the space missions, manned and unmanned, have taken tens of thousands of photographs. And it's paid for with taxpayer money. But if anything shows up that might cause questions, they're airbrushed out. and the originals are archived and not discussed. And what's not openly discussed is also that there is an entire building in the NASA facility dedicated to airbrushing those photos before they get released to the public. So you have to ask yourself, what do our leaders not want us to know? Well, we're going to look at some facts about the moon. And we've talked about a number of them. You know, actually, two schools of thought about how the moon was formed. The first school of thought is what, when I came up through school, was known as the Big Whack Theory. That something hit the Earth millions of years ago and created a crowd of debris that eventually came together to create the moon. Second school of thought is that the moon broke off from the Earth when the planet was still in the molten stage. Well, we've also addressed the issue of the fact that the moon is actually older than the Earth. Zachariah Sitchin, who I interviewed a number of times on my show when I was doing it from Anaheim, and I actually met him when I was in New York, wrote a book called Genesis Revisited, where he discussed some of the what he called answers regarding the moon. And he said they're there for anybody to read if you just research Sumerian cosmology. According to the moon, to the Sumerians, one of the 11 moons of Tiamat, that's the name of a planet that previously occupied Earth's orbit, according to the ancient stories. And that moon was named Kingu. Well, it grew to an unusual size and became increasingly disruptive to all the other planets of the solar system. And during an ensuing period of instability, Tiamat split into two pieces. One half was completely shattered and became the asteroid belt. And the other half, accompanied by Kingu, stabilized a new orbit to become the Earth and its moon. Now, assuming that Sitchin was correct about the Sumerian cosmology regarding the moon, it's now clear that none of our scientific theories about the moon are correct. It's hard to come up with all the answers when you sit in your ivory towers and pontificate. So its origin is still in doubt, but it's not the only mystery that revolves around the moon. As I made mention in an earlier show, scientists have long called the moon a dead rock floating in space. But when the Apollo astronauts drilled into the surface of the moon in order to insert probes to monitor the moon's temperature, they brought up metal shavings, not pieces of rock. In fact, BusinessInsider.com had an interesting story entitled "The 40-Year-Old Mystery About Rising Temperatures on the Moon Has Been Solved." And it was probably the Apollo astronauts' fault. Now, all this data comes from so-called heat flow experiments that were conducted on the moon in 71 and 72 by members of Apollo 15 and Apollo 17 missions. For these experiments, the astronauts drilled two holes into the surface at depths ranging anywhere between 3.2 feet and 7.5 feet deep. Fiberglass tubes were inserted into the holes, and platinum thermometers were put inside the tubes to read the temperatures at varying depths below the surface. In 1975, it was noted that the thermometers recorded an unusual warming on the surface of the moon 4 years after the probes were inserted. Now, researchers, of course, looking for some way to explain it without daring to bring up the idea the moon was hollow, said, well, the men that walked on the moon may have caused this increase in temperature. Now, there were a number of other theories, but each was more bizarre than the one before it. And, of course, if some of the theories that I'm going to talk about are true, there is a simple answer for this increase in temperature. It's also interesting to note that there are hundreds of moonquakes every year that can't be ascribed to any particular cause. So that brings up the question that's never been answered. What's the interior of the moon like? November 19, 1969, the Apollo 12 lunar lander Intrepid landed on the moon. Astronauts Alan Bean and Pete Conrad landed on the moon to conduct a new round of experiments and discovered some very interesting things. From the website history.nasa.gov, you get the history of the Apollo expeditions to the moon. Chapter 12.3 is interesting in that it confirms a number of the so-called tall tales about the moon. The two Apollo 12 astronauts examined the crash site of Surveyor 3, which crashed in 1967. Now, according to these two astronauts, Surveyor was covered with a coating of fine dust that looked to be tan or maybe brown in the lunar light. The craft was no longer the pristine white it had been in when it left Earth orbit. Now, scientists who, to use their phrase, didn't want to speculated, Surveyor became covered in this fashion when the dust on the moon was kicked up with the landing of Apollo 12, even though Apollo 12 landed over 600 feet away. So the Apollo 12 astronauts took samples from the Surveyor 3 wreckage for study on Earth. They cut samples of the aluminum tubing that seemed much more brittle than it had on Earth. And they cut samples of electrical cable, which under later examination showed had gotten dry, hard, and brittle. That only happens when it's exposed to the elements, to include rain. Now, once the moonwalkers returned to their command module, after some experiments, it was decided to jettison the landing module, which was planned to be crashed into the moon. Now, one reason for the crashing the landing module was that they had placed a number of seismic recording devices on the surface, and they wanted to see what they'd record regarding the crash of the landing module. According to the testing equipment, the moon rang like a gong, vibrating and resonating for almost an hour after the crash. And from this, even these rocket scientists, and I use that term loosely, deduced that the core of the moon may not be solid, but rather somewhat hollow. When Apollo 14 jettisoned their lunar module, Antares, this same phenomenon was observed at two of the OSEP stations. In fact, on every mission after Apollo 12, additional seismic calibrations were obtained by aiming the Saturn S4B stage to impact at a selected point on the moon. And in each and every case, vibrations generally lasted about 3 hours. Now, if the core of the moon was solid, that wouldn't happen. So based on these experiments, it can only be concluded the core of the moon is not solid, which gives rise to speculation the interior of the moon may be actually hollow. But scientists don't want to speculate. They want to pontificate. Now, researchers also determined the moon has three distinct layers of rock. We've always been taught that in the formation of our planet, the heavier rocks sink to the core and the lighter rocks are found on the surface. But according to Don Wilson, who wrote Our Mysterious Spaceship Moon, all these anomalies have been carefully studied by two Soviet scientists. And I talked about Vastin and Alexander Sherbakov and their theory. They came up with the artificial moon theory, that the moon was actually a hollowed-out spaceship. Now, there had been theories for years by various scientists that one way to deal with the overpopulation problem on the planet was to take an asteroid, hollow it out, create what they called a generational spaceship, and send it off into space. Now, you might think this theory about the artificial moon is an outlandish theory, but it came from an article published in the July 1962 issue of Aeronautics Magazine. In that article, Dr. Gordon McDonnell, who was a leading scientist at NASA at the time, said that according to an analysis of the moon's motion, it appears the moon is in fact hollow. He went on to say if the astronomical data is reduced, it is found that the data requires that the interior of the moon be less dense than the outer parts. So he went on to finally say it seems the moon is more like a hollow sphere than a homogeneous sphere. Now if, as the Soviet scientists proposed, the moon is a hollowed out spaceship, then the hull would have to be tremendously strong. But arguing that this is the very observable fact that meteors have bombarded the surface of the moon since time immemorial. And while this would seem to be a problem to the theory that the moon's a hollow sphere, it's interesting to note that even the largest craters, as I said earlier, that were caused by what are apparently meteor crashes, are unusually shallow. Craters that are 50 to 100 miles across are generally no more than 2 to 3 miles deep. Anything big enough to make a 50 to 100 mile across crater would certainly go more than 2 or 3 miles deep. Research has shown that a meteor weighing a million tons would hit the surface of the moon with an explosive force equal to a 1 megaton atomic bomb. But there's little doubt that meteors weighing a million tons has hit the lunar surface time and time again and left only broad, shallow craters. However, scientific research has shown that meteors 10 miles or more in diameter should have penetrated the surface to a depth of 4 to 5 times that diameter. But the deepest moon crater found to date, and it's known as the Gagarin crater, is 186 miles across and less than 4 miles deep. So after looking at all the evidence, scientists could only conclude that beneath the moon's surface is something extremely strong and tough that can resist penetration by such high-impact explosives. And a lot of scientists who are not concerned about the mainstream scientific thought have suggested this may be the interior hull of a hidden spacecraft. So the evidence seems to support the fact that the moon may be hollow with an incredibly tough inner shell of some kind. There have been theories that the Earth is hollow, and so far that's not been proven to be true. So let's look at some of the evidence there might be inhabitants on our closest neighbor in space. You know, in spite of all the assurances we've received from our scientific leaders, the moon is basically dead. A rock orbiting the Earth. There's a large body of evidence that there's something going on both on the surface of and inside this so-called dead rock. So we're going to look at some of the very unusual anomalies that have been recorded. In the year 1843, astronomer Johann Schroeder recorded a crater 6 miles wide on the surface of the moon he called Linne, L-I-N-N-E. Its depth was estimated to be about 1,200 feet. Today, Linne is a tiny bright spot with very little depth, just a small pit surrounded by a number of whitish objects. To date, nobody's come up with an explanation for how that crater was filled in or has identified what those whitish objects might be. As our closest neighbor, the moon has been studied by every type of scientist on the planet, certainly by astronomers from every country. And many of these scientists also listen intently for any sign that there are signals coming in from space. So it's not too surprising that many of these scientists report hearing strange messages coming from space. In 1935, two scientists by the name of Vanderpoel and Carl Stormer heard radio signals both coming from the surface as well as the area around the moon. Marconi and Tesla also reported flashing lunar lights originating from this supposedly dead rock in space. In 1956, scientists at Ohio University as well as numerous observatories around the globe reported hearing a code-like chatter coming from the moon. 1958, astronomers from America, Russia, and Great Britain spotted something speeding toward the moon at over 25,000 miles an hour. The astronomers also detected radio signals that nobody could decipher coming from this mysterious object. Now, it's not just been one source for comment about strange things seen on and around the moon. In the 1950s, numerous UFO were tracked about to the moon by government tracking stations. In the 1950s and 60s, moving as well as flashing lights were seen on the lunar surface by civilian astronomers. Usually these lights were seen inside craters. Though there's a great deal of photographic evidence of activity on the moon, NASA's gone to great lengths to cover up as much as they can. Unfortunately for NASA, both Soviet as well as American spacecraft in orbit around the moon began to photograph mysterious structures on the surface of the moon. Now keep in mind, though NASA is called the Civilian Space Agency, if you look at its charter, it's part of the Department of Defense. And the Department of Defense, when in doubt, classifies. was American spacecraft Ranger 2 that took over 200 photographs of the moon that showed domes erected inside some of those craters. French astronomers reported in the news media seeing these mysterious domes over 50 years ago. That being the case, it's just fascinating. People call and call and call and just breathe. Well, we're talking about domes that have been photographed on the moon. Lunar Orbiter 2 took 33 photos of domes on the moon that were released in Washington, D.C. in 1967. Now, as strange as it may seem, NASA's admitted that we found man-made structures on the moon. Bet you didn't know that. This took place during a briefing at the Washington National Press Club, March 21, 1996. At that point in time, NASA scientists and engineers took part in exploration of the Mars and the Moon, reported that for the first time, man-made structures and other objects had been discovered on the surface of the Moon. There are also numerous former NASA employees who revealed that all NASA photos are carefully examined, and any UFOs or anything would tend to confirm the belief there are entities living on the Moon. They may have been caught in the pictures or airbrushed out before the photos are added to the catalog. So clearly there's some fear at NASA we may find proof UFOs exist. In fact, unusual artifacts that shouldn't exist if the moon is a dead rock have been discovered in 44 different regions of our closest neighbor. According to Richard C. Hoagland, who's well known for his research into the face on Mars, the ruins of lunar cities that stretch for many kilometers have been photographed, as well as huge domes at or near some of the major craters that dot the surface of the moon. There's even one NASA photo of Copernicus crater that shows a bright, self-illuminating object in the distance that resembles a tower. We talked about a tower in a previous show. There's also a transparent dome photographed on the edge of Copernicus crater that glows white and blue from the inside. And as I said earlier, in one of my earlier shows when I was operating out of Anaheim, I was asked by a listener. It was my show then was called Adventure Radio on KORG Radio in Anaheim, California. He asked me to order a specific picture from NASA and brought me the money to pay for it. The picture showed a track vehicle rolling across the surface of the moon. Of course, the date of that photo was at a time that nobody was supposed to be on the moon. I contacted NASA and asked them to explain the photo, but rather than answer, they said to get back to me. They never did. Unfortunately, our own government's taken a position we're not ready to know the truth about what flies in our skies, though there has been some leaking of information. And more recently, there's been a lot of discussion about military plane gun cameras that photographed a lot of UFOs. In spite of our own government's refusal to admit the reality of UFOs, there's been evidence. It's been hard for them to cover up. July 19, 1952, a veritable fleet of UFOs flew over the White House, the Capitol building, and the Department of Defense. Happened again July 25, 1952. In spite of numerous photos and stories in major mainstream media, the government has simply refused to discuss it. And you can't trust anything mainstream media says. Well, we're told by our government we don't even formally research UFO sightings any longer, so there are no such things as flying saucers. However, there are numerous stories that in the face of this blatant activity by the power behind UFOs that our leaders actually met representatives of this alien power to discuss an actual treaty. Now, many continue to discount the very idea that such a meeting took place, but there are stories that can't be discounted out of hand. It's long been reported in fear that there might be an alien attack. President Harry S. Truman ordered the military to contact these entities to arrange the release of an alien captured by the U.S. military at one of the crash sites. Then later in 1952, it was reported that Truman ordered the CIA and the NSA to broadcast a message to the aliens who wanted to meet with them to discuss a treaty. Now, you need to remember that it was President Truman that signed the National Security Act in 1947. Only 76 days after the crash of an alien craft at Roswell. And there are a lot of folks who don't believe that was a coincidence. and what became known as the National Security Agency had its beginnings April 28, 1917, as the Cipher Bureau, created shortly after the beginnings of World War I. It became the NSA in 1952, and its very existence was classified. Now, according to the story, the CIA and the Cipher Bureau, or the NSA, if you will, worked to carry out the president's directive of trying to contact the aliens. This program became known as Project Sigma, which began in 1952. Now, though authorized in 52 by President Truman, it wasn't until 53 under President Eisenhower that Project Sigma was actually successful. According to William Milt and Bill Cooper, it was under Project Sigma that humans first established communication with the aliens, and he claimed the project is still in existence. Allegedly using communications equipment salvaged from crashed UFOs, messages were beamed to several huge ships that radar revealed were in orbit about the planet. According to Bill Cooper, Project Sigma became Project Plato, which was given the responsibility for establishing diplomatic relations with the aliens. Project Plato was said to be created in 53 at the same time contact was first made with these alien beings. So under the auspices of Project Plato, on February 20th, 1954, a formal treaty was agreed to with the aliens. It was signed by President Eisenhower. Now, under the terms of the U.S. Constitution, this treaty is actually illegal as it was never formally ratified by Congress. And the reason they couldn't put it before Congress for ratification, if you want it posted on the bulletin board at your local high school, give something to Congress and tell them it's classified. Under the terms of this treaty, the U.S. government would receive technology in return to keep the alien presence a secret and not interfere in any way with anything the aliens wanted to do. They'd also be allowed to abduct humans and animals, though the aliens did agree to furnish the government with a list of those abducted. Also, according to Bill Cooper, Project Crystal Knight was the name given to the exchange of ambassadors between humans and extraterrestrial entities. Reported that 12 people were selected in 1965 and sent for a 13-year period to what was reported to be the planet of the extraterrestrial biological entities, also known as EBEs. This exchange was said to have run from 1954 to 1978. It was reported only 8 of the 12 came back to Earth. 2 died, 2 wanted to stay, and the remaining 8 came back. It's also been reported by a researcher by the name of Val Valerian that the treaty was renewed on April 25th, 1964, during a meeting at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico. So assuming these stories have any validity to them at all, it would seem that the aliens have been among us formally for over 60 years. With legal or semi-legal sanction by our own government. The very idea we have a treaty with alien beings gives rise to a number of questions. For example, could some of them be living among us? This concept is not more unbelievable than that they exist in the first place. Consider, if you will, we've all met people we consider strange. Especially in the big city, there have been stories about truly unbelievable people who've lived very strange lives. Could it be aliens or perhaps hybrids? That was discussed in great detail by John Keel in a book called Our Haunted Planet. Certainly, the very idea of contact between man and some sort of mimicking entities are not rare. In fact, such contacts number in the millions throughout history. And I might also point out, at the risk of causing coronary arrest among those who are rabid believers in our world's religions, that the very concept of most religions are based on the concept that man has, for lack of a better term, a higher being, called an angel, God, or Harry the Hairy Ape. The concept still remains a human met something extremely weird by earthly standards and interacted with it. Even early man was well aware of the possibility he or she could come in contact with those who were not exactly human. In the Bible, the book of Hebrews, chapter 13, verse 2, is a very clear warning. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware. So we have to ask at this point, what's an angel? And most angels in the Bible are described as looking like ordinary man. The idea that the angels have wings was an artistic concept to make it clear there was something beyond the ordinary. And I'd submit that in its basic definition that an angel is a representative of a higher power. Be that higher power a god or a more powerful entity than a mere human. Should be noted there are literally thousands of stories of interaction between humankind and, for lack of a better term, inhumankind. Now, setting aside the strangeness for a moment, let's ask some practical questions. Where do all these odd creatures live that are wandering our planet? Now, while there are some places in this world that are rarely visited by educated man in the U.S., there are a few places that are not at least regularly passed through. But a place that would certainly fit the bill as a home for these mysterious entities would, of course, be the moon. Now, scientists have long taught us there can't be any life on the moon. It's an airless rock floating in space. So, what raises the possibility there might be life on the moon? Well, the concept that there might be some type of life on the moon began when Marconi, the inventor of the radio, reported his experiments in transmitting radio signals to the moon resulted in his getting answering signals back. Shortly after that, in the 20s and 30s, astronomers in America, Britain, and France reported seeing glowing, moving, and even blinking lights on the surface of the moon. And interest peaked in the early 1950s when John O'Neill, an expert in aerial phenomena and a Pulitzer Prize winner, he was an astronomer, don't you know, reported seeing a lighted bridge on the surface of the moon that he believed was built by a mysterious intelligence. So numerous other astronomers began to survey the same area of the moon where O'Neill had seen the 12-mile-long bridge, and they were forced to admit he had, in fact, seen such an oddity on the surface of the deserted moon. Now, apparently, that bridge was later dismantled by the same intelligence that built it. Should also be noted, during the 50s and even into the 60s, there were many UFOs that were tracked by both civilian astronomers as well as government tracking stations going from the Earth to the moon. In fact, NASA came out with a national technical report that lists activity on the moon that goes from the mid-1500s up to 1968. So it seems our deserted moon has been pretty busy over the years. Now, certainly a moon base would be the perfect place to hide a fleet of UFOs. And from the latter part of the 1950s into the 1960s, a number of astronomers recorded moving, flashing, and stationary lights on the surface of the moon. And it should be noted that much of this activity seemed to be concentrated inside the craters dotting the surface of the moon. And so it was that with a massive expenditure of time and resources, the U.S. landed a man on the moon in 1969. Much like Columbus landing in the New World, it was time to plant our flag as a sign of conquest and break out the champagne. Or maybe not. You see, there's evidence we were not the first on the moon. There's a report that when Buzz Aldrin opened the door of Lunar Lander, he found himself staring at a sentient creature that seemed as surprised to see him as he was to see it. Should be noted there were a number of communications that were heard to hard to understand between the astronauts on the moon and Houston. And maybe this can be explained by something said by NASA Director Kraft when he commented on the fact that there was both a public as well as a private radio channel between the moon and Mission Control. This private radio channel was certainly in support of the requirement that if NASA discovered anything that would tend to support the existence of other life forms, it was to remain classified. Remember, NASA is part of the Department of Defense. It was noted at the moment of landing there was a mysterious 2-minute interruption between men on the moon and Mission Control. It would appear possible this creature was the topic of that conversation that we didn't get a chance to hear. I've also heard mention of this strange communication with a number of ham radio operators who had VHF equipment allowing them to listen directly to the astronaut communications, and they reported hearing the discussion of this creature that Aldrin is supposed to have seen. Even ham radio operators in Russia reported to have heard these censored communications and quickly published information in Moscow that there were creatures on the moon. Well, in spite of the efforts by NASA Mission Control to censor the communications from Apollo 11, apparently there was a slip-up in regard to communications from Apollo 15 when astronaut James Irwin, the lunar module pilot, talked about dome structures that are partially filled up. breaches either flowed into these structures before they were built, or the domes are younger than the floor. The area is oval or elliptical. The communications heard talked about flashes of light, buildings, roads, tracks, and huge blocks. At one point, he made the comment, "That's the most organized structure I've ever seen." Of course, when space program officials were asked about the comments, they were told that the comments by Irwin were metaphors for geological formations. Clearly, somebody thinks man on the street's an imbecile. And while James Irwin was touring domes on the surface of the moon, Al Warden, a command module pilot for Apollo 15, was having his own interaction with someone or something on the moon. According to Warden, at 11:15, there was an unusual fading communication with Mission Control. He said he then heard a breathing sound and a long, piercing whistle. And it was a sentence constantly repeated on one note, varying from a small to a shrill tone, and from lightly stressed sounds to raucous exclamations. The lunar module's tape recorder captured the message, and when communications were reestablished, Warden transmitted it to NASA. It's interesting to note that his transmission to Mission Control was also heard on French public television. Now, this should have been impossible, but it happened. The message recorded and transmitted to Mission Control consisted of 8 words in an unknown language. The message was Mara, Rabbi, Alardi, Denny, Endeavor, Essa, Coons, Alum. Translated, that is. If it has, the meaning has never been released by NASA. Then there was a comment that's long been attributed to Neil Armstrong. He's reported to have said, "We were ordered to move away by aliens on the moon." According to reports, speaking unofficially, Armstrong said, "We were warned away. I can't go into detail except to say their ships are far superior to ours, both in size and technology. They were great and threatening." On the 25th day of January 1994, the Clementine mission was launched as a joint project between the Strategic Defense Initiative Organization and NASA. The stated mission was to explore other areas of the moon and take photographs. Well, when scientists reviewed the data from Clementine, they discovered, contrary to our basic beliefs about the moon, ice existed inside some of the moon's craters. You can't have ice without water. This finding was further confirmed in early 1998 by NASA's Lunar Prospector. Now, I'm not a scientist by any means, but I do know that if there's ice, there's liquid on the moon, something we were assured could not possibly be true. In addition to this came a statement from Dr. John Brandenburg, deputy manager of the Clementine mission. In review, he said that the Clementine mission was a photo reconnaissance mission, basically to check out if somebody was building bases on the moon that we don't know about. Now, that raises interesting questions. He went on to say, "Of all the pictures I've seen from the moon that show possible structures, the most impressive is a picture of a miles-wide rectilinear structure. Looks unmistakably artificial, and it shouldn't be there. As somebody in the space defense community, I'd look on any such structure on the moon as a great concern because it isn't ours. There's no way we could have built such a thing. It means there's somebody else up there who has far more technological capability than we do." It's been interesting to note that though it's been kept very quiet, NASA released a 2-ton Centaur kinetic weapon that impacted on the moon October 9, 2009. And for those that are not familiar with this type of weapon, a kinetic bombardment's the act of attacking a planetary surface with an inert projectile. This destructive force comes from the kinetic energy of that projectile impacting at very high velocity. In other words, we bombed the moon. It said that there was done for scientific purposes, but there is a large number of people who believe that this was done to destroy a number of alien structures that had been built on the surface of the moon. It should also be noted some of the very ancient craters on the moon's surface resemble nuclear bomb craters more than they do craters left by asteroids. Maybe we're not the first ones to have bombed the moon. And it was claimed by a former NASA employee, Clark McClellan, that mining operations were observed by the Apollo 15 astronaut crew. Of course, nothing was said to the general public, but if somebody's mining the moon, then clearly they've established some control over our satellite and feel secure in conducting their operations. Which raises 2 questions. What is it's being mined, and who in the world is mining it? Well, on that note, we've run out of time. We'll be back at our next show and talk more about some of the mysteries of the moon. Until then, Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.